Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
I'm here to help.
On August 21st,
we have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is, trust me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.
Hey, before the pod starts, it's me, Jeff. I am in a hotel room in Panama City Beach, Florida. The TV doesn't work. It's stuck on this local beach TV channel that's just promoting a bunch of restaurants. They all look horrible. Also, the Wi-Fi doesn't work, and that's why I'm talking to you right now. We delayed the pod so we could record it. Because I wasn't able to record it. I'm currently on this road trip reality show for Barstool. Couldn't record it in Dallas. Got to Panama City Beach. Wi-Fi doesn't work. Just none. So that stinks. Therefore, I'm not on this podcast. I'd like to Quiet Place Part 2 quite a bit, though. So there's a little spoiler of my review. Pretty damn good movie. I was surprised it was that good. So, yeah, that's what I think about that. That's it. Once again, Ken Jack Control. I should be on. If I'm not on Sunday, that means the Nashville. I think we'll be in Nashville or Chicago. Nashville won't have that. That would mean Nashville doesn't have Wi-Fi. I highly doubt that because Nashville definitely has Wi-Fi. Okay, and here's the podcast.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 364. That's what I say when my four large adult sons, I have to bring them to Best Buy, and they ask me, what do you want, sir? 364. Just for my large adult sons.
Oh, okay. I thought you were ordering, Xbox 360?
Xbox 360s.
Okay. They still sell those at Best Buy?
Probably not.
I'm just going to heckle you. They don't even sell those anymore at Best Buy, you asshole.
Jeff, today
is the Bill Burr thing where you like just go off on the city you're in and somehow turn the crowd around. One of the most amazing moments ever.
I don't know. I still know how he does that. It's Bill Burr is an incredible human being. Jeff's not here today. He's wrapped up in a, what hotel was it? It was a crappy Wi-Fi hotel branch. That brand. Now that much I remember.
I don't want to call them out specifically because I don't want them to resend my points. They ever put two and two together.
Let's just say if
I check into the hotel under Trill Ballins, that's what I do. I'm like, just don't tell him I'm here.
Let's say you wanted to become engaged to an otter. What would happen after that? Naturally. After you got engaged and got all the invitations out, you would do what to said otter?
Wed otter?
So anyway, what's been going on with you, Trill?
Not much, man. I mean, yeah, tough episode to get everybody together for. Jeff was down to the wire on the last minute, whether or not he could be able to do it. And then he got to the hotel and I think he only has like two channels. It's like one's like NBC and the other is E!
No, it was local pizza commercials. That's the funniest thing, dude. I love
where
that.
Where is he anyway? Is he in like Texas still, or is he in Oklahoma?
I'm not entirely sure. A big city, where I know that much, but
world
somewhere
is Jeff D. Lowe, man.
I'm not entirely sure. I do know the Wi-Fi is fucked up for sure, though. But yet you're wearing an amazing shirt right now. It is a Con Air retro shirt.
Oh, it's a face-off shirt.
Sorry, face-off.
Yeah, it was part of a Throwing Fits three-pack, and the face-off shirt's my favorite just because I love face-off, but there's an Old Boy shirt and a Social Network shirt, so they're really cool shirts. Sue me, I'm plugging someone else's merch, that's fine, but I'll plug theirs.
It's a classic like three-way too. Like whenever someone says to me like, hey, I really like Social Network, what else should I watch? I'd always like, my old boy, obviously, like you got to check that out. Dude, this guy, like he has sex with his daughter and then he has to cut out his tongue. Like, dude, you're going to love it. It's just like that. Same, just like Face Off too. Same thing.
It's like, should I watch the original version of Old Boy first or the American version? And it's just watch the original. Don't even watch the American version. No need.
Yeah.
I guess no it was okay.
To Spike.
It's just not, it was okay. It's just like.
Not even close to the original.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't even. Yeah. You're right. It didn't even come close. Now, not much is up with me, man. Do we have a game? Do you want to do a gaming corner?
Let's do a quick gaming corner.
Okay.
I finished up Dying Light for the second time. Dying Light 2 is coming out soon. I just pre-ordered it last night because I just, every time I play Dying Light, I'm so impressed by how good it is. And it is just, it's so much fun. Open world zombie game. I think they did it perfect. And I'm so pumped out for the second version, just a better graphics enhanced version of the first one. Preferably, but I don't know. We'll see.
Is it a single player game? Is it a multiplayer?
They have multiplayer game? Modes, but like it's a game that you primarily play for single player.
Okay, nice. I might look into that. I always get confused with Dying Light and Dead by Daylight.
Oh, that's the one where you're like in a motorcycle, right?
No, that's Days Gone.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The one you sent me for my birthday.
Oh, I said, did I? That's right. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I was Ken Jack. I will say this about Ken Jack. Ken Jack has sent me a disproportionate amount of gifts. Like he's a good gift giver. He's a very, very good gift giver. I've given him a foam hammer and he's given me everything. He sent me a katana. He sent me a video game. He sent me hats. He sent me t-shirts. He sent my daughter stuff. Like I say what you want about Jeff, but Jeff doesn't fucking give me shit. Ken Jack's the one who gives me gifts.
That foam hammer you gave me followed me everywhere. Like I couldn't get rid of it because I was at my like girlfriend's cousin's over quarantine or whatever. And we had it there. They forced me to take it with me to back to her parents' house. Her parents forced me to take it with me when I moved into my current apartment. And then my girlfriend made me get rid of it. So it went down the trash chute. So it's sitting in the landfill somewhere in New Jersey, I think.
Oh, that's fine. But it's kind of one of those things where something like a foam hammer is in that category of stuff that's tough to give away, even though you know you'll never miss it. Because mm-hmm. Just like if something's a certain weight, you kind of just don't want to throw it away. Like in your mind, you're like, yeah, it doesn't feel right to just put this in a trash bag. I should like take it and donate it or something. But yeah, it's a foam hammer, so I'm sure it will it'll decompose in a landfill over the next 125 years.
It was extremely the first 10 days I had that was so much fun because all I did was run around bonking people with it. It's fun for me. I'm sure not for everyone else, but it was extremely just entertaining. Gave me, I think I'm assuming it wasn't crazy expensive or anything. I think I got exactly the amount of value of entertainment for the amount that was paid for it.
Dude, say what you want about the live action role play crew, but you know, getting dressed up and wielding fake weapons makes you feel cool as hell. Like, you know, that would make you feel good.
Dude, I wonder if they're doing, if COVID shut down LARPing, but well, sure, I feel like you could do that with a mask on.
I mean, but if it's outside, you could definitely do it with the, you know, CDC guidelines. You could do it with the mask off, go future style. And yeah. I bet LARPing, I would be willing to bet. I'm going to write a trend piece for the New York Times. It's like LARPing's taking off post pandemic because people are seeking refuge outside of their home, looking for new activities. And then like, it's just like, you know, like a group of like 26-year-old Williamsburg bros now getting into LARPing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could absolutely see that. I would love to do LARPing. I remember there was a movie that I had watched. It was like a smaller indie thing. I remember me and my brothers were obsessed with it. It was semi about LARPing called The Sasquatch Gang. Justin Long was in it among other people. But I remember that watching that, I was like, this seems so fun. Just running around whacking people with foam swords and like mm-hmm. cosplaying or doing Lord of the Rings or whatever. I mean, that sounds amazing.
Would you know if you could roll a LARP character, would you be like a heavy? Would you be a tank or would you be a mage or something, you know, more skilled in the arcane arts?
I think tank is the easiest for me to wrap my head around. Anything that requires too much finesse is just not built for me. Specifically anyway. So I think I just have to do tank. Although I think that there's probably enough tanks in the world.
No, man. I mean, you know, I think being a tank's cool because you get the cool heavy weapons. You get the battle axe and you get the shield or whatever you want. I think I would like the mage apparel better though. Like I would like a nice, like swagged out robe with some like knee high boots. And I already got, you know, my hair's already gone and I got it shaved down, and, you know, doing the Jason Statham thing. So I feel like I got like a general mage vibe going already. I would need a staff or you know, maybe a staff and a cape. Yeah. Like a cloak, like something, a nice hood, but it's like one of those hoods that form like a triangular point, you know, it's like wider at the bottom. Can't be like a sweatshirt hood that just like,
yeah,
I have a vision. And definitely belt it up, like definitely like a really tight belt, so it's really cinched at the waist. I know what I'm going for with this mage look. I feel like I would just want to LARP just to look fresh, and I wouldn't even focus on the actual gameplay of the LARPing, and therefore the LARP community would hate me. But like at least the pictures would look cool.
I kind of want to LARP Assassin's Creed just because I think that hood looks so cool. You know, like the hood with the little point to it, like the little talon on it, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the problem with LARPing Assassin's Creed is the best thing about the Assassin's Creed costume is the blade that comes out of your like wrist area, the mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some cosplayer has been able to like make something that's like non-lethal, but also like retracts mechanically. It's cosplayers figure everything out.
A foam, whatever blade they call that would be, I think, tough to figure out. But again, like you're saying, they're extremely smart cosplayers. They figure out how to make anyone look like anything. They're incredibly talented people.
You could LARP Assassin's Creed by just dressing like an assassin and running errands all day.
That is more or less the game. You're just like insert a popular historical figure and like say you're running an errand for them. Like, yeah, Albert Einstein told me to go pick up his relativity formula at fucking San Pablo base or whatever.
It's like, I'm here for the dry cleaning. Are you a Templar? No. Okay. I'll take this. Starch? Oh, fuck. No starch.
How much you want to fucking bet there'll be eventually an Assassin's Creed where Albert Einstein is a Templar? I think the odds are pretty good.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know like where they go next with Assassin's Creed is the thing. Is like you almost feel like
Sam Fisher, turn it into fucking what do you call it? Oh my gosh. What's the Sam Fisher? How do I know Sam Fisher? But I don't know.
Splinter Cell? Ghost
Splinter Cell, yeah. Just make it into like a full on stealth like shooter game.
Yeah, I do wonder if at some point they'll do modern day just because they run out of the Not that they run out of historical settings, but the historical settings, like obviously, they provide that nice back and forth between the modern day, but it would be cool to just have everything set in the modern day. And by cool, I mean, I'll do the same thing I do with every Assassin's Creed game where I play it for 7 hours and I'm like, ah, okay, I got it. I'll just mm-hmm. Google the rest of the plot.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And like, there's definitely a point with no return with that. Still very funny interaction when I did the Assassin's Creed Odyssey playthrough with the Montreal Ubisoft designers. And I made like this, at an inflection point, like made the decision to kill a bunch of civilians. And he was like, you are the only one to make this decision between 500 defunct test groups. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I thought it'd be cool.
It's like ripped to these NPCs, but I'm built different.
Literally, it was that. And he was like, so shocked that I chose to do it. It was so funny. Before we get into some of our news topics, I want to talk really quick about, and we'll get into bits later, about BetterHelp. We can get serious for a second about it. Last year was obviously very hard on a lot of people, and that's why we've teamed up with BetterHelp. We love you guys. We mentioned being positive about mental health all the time. And it's just like a lot for us to take care of our bodies. And this year, it's tough for us to take care of our minds, too. So, you know, the same thing as like going to the gym and working out. You should be making sure that you're taking care of your mind as well. And BetterHelp, they are customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist so that you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. You can join the millions of people who are seeing what therapy is really all about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. And again, I mean, we're I think throughout the entire history of our podcast, we've been very pro mental health. Implies there's people that are just anti mental health. Think everyone's pro mental health. We've always been pro about like making sure you're trying to break down the stigmas around that, those conversations, and making sure that everyone realizes that there's no shame behind any of that. And again, Better Hope is out there. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/lights. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/lights. First news item, there's a new trailer for The Boss Baby, The Family Business. I know you're waiting to dig your hands into this one, Rachel.
Anticipating this one, obviously. Now, I don't remember what was much different from the original Boss Baby trailer. Like, I think the thing that was unsurprising about the original Boss Baby trailer is that they had like adult versions of the Boss Baby, not like in a weird mm-hmm. way, but like a literal adult Boss Baby. And then he drinks the magic formula and he becomes a baby again because he's needed at baby headquarters. And I mean, obviously, like I'm really concerned that the sequel will undo all the lore that the first one had set up and establishing the Boss Baby universe and the subsequent Netflix series of Boss Baby Back in Business. However, I will give it the benefit of the doubt. Seriously, though, I didn't mind the first Boss Baby. I thought that the concept was ridiculous, and the lasting memory I have of Boss Baby 1 or Boss Baby I, as it's considered by Boss Baby historians, is there was a cardboard cutout in the movie theater when I went to go see a movie where you could put your head in the place of the Boss Baby and actually be the Boss Baby. And you know, I did that show. I the picture's long deleted, but I had to be the Boss Baby. You have to know what it feels like to have the sword dangling above your neck. The weight of the world on decisions. The original Boss Baby?
It was like diapers or foreclosures. Probably cookies, actually.
I think it was cookies are for closers because of the alliteration.
Yeah.
Boss Baby. Now, I don't think there's much to talk about with the Boss Baby, but do you think this is the easiest paycheck Alec Baldwin has ever cashed in?
I'm trying to think of the other movies I've seen him in. And I think that this is definitely the one he's had to put among any movie or show the least amount of effort into, I would assume. Because they're just like, yeah, play like slightly exaggerated version of what everyone thinks you are in your day-to-day life. And he just does that.
You're he's doing Jack Donaghy, but he doesn't have to actually like act
or try.
Well, I mean, like voice acting is acting. Like, don't get me wrong. But for
Jack Donaghy, he was like a physical character too, you know?
Yeah. But I feel like if you're an actor, if you're an accomplished actor, voice acting is probably not as difficult as regular on-screen acting. If you are an actor, voice acting is incredibly difficult, but that would be my guess. I could be completely wrong because I've never done either. There just has to be a reason so many people do the voice acting thing maybe it's hard to actually do it because there's nobody acting in front of you. But I think if you think about the work schedule and you think about like committing to like a filming and production, it feels like you just kind of show up at a studio that's 15 minutes away from your house and record your lines, or they send you a kit and you can just do it remotely.
Yeah. I think they're hard in different ways, right? Because like you have to slightly make the character your own when you're doing voice acting and like match up whatever the director is trying to make a vision out of it. And that's hard on its own. Obviously acting physically, like your body language has so much to do with it. And like, you need to make sure, like you could be delivering the lines perfectly, but if you look weird, if you like, you swallow at a weird point, if you like, anything physically throws off the shot, like you just have to do it again. So like it's just obviously all the eyes on you as well. It's just like a totally different world. But I mean, for him, like you're saying, the character of Jack Donaghy is so, I feel like, his physicality was part of it, right? Like he kind of like wielded it around, and that was part of like the humor of him. So just to be able to do that, just sitting in a studio, like sipping Diet Cokes or whatever, I'm sure is a reprieve for him at least.
Well, I mean, and part of why that, like, yeah, I get it. Like the Jack Donaghy character was like pretty brilliant, I thought, like both from like what Alec Baldwin was able to do, but like also the way like Alec Baldwin just has that like executive look, like that fucking asshole executive look to him already that I thought just fit in very well to it. So like on both fronts.
Yeah.
I do think his strongest voice work to date though is probably in the Final Fantasy Spirits Within movie, at least in 2001, where the main character of the movie was featured in Maxim's Hot 100. You probably don't remember that, but like,
no,
it was back at the changeover when like video games were starting to like break into, they're starting to break into popular culture more and more. And they started doing these like weird crossovers with the men's magazines. Like, I mean, like the young men's magazines or like the bro magazines, like FHM and Maxim, where they'd be like, you know, it'd be great marketing for this if we just had, if we had one of our characters in a bikini that was in this. And so I think they did it with like, they did it with this character, and they might have done something with Laura Croft, though I think it was less pathetic than this. Very weird movie. And also something funny about this movie as well is like how good it looked at the time, and now it just looks like a cutscene from a regular video game.
Yeah, not even so a recent one.
That's Boss Baby 2, The Spirits
Within. Yeah, The Spirits Within. Next news item up, Donnie Yen joined the cast of John Wick 4. He will star as an old friend and ally to Keanu Reeves' titular character. I think this is awesome, and I love Donnie Yen. You know, he's obviously been, I think, a great action performer over the decades. Like he's had, like, I think, a 30-year career now, if you combine his Hollywood and Hong Kong cinema careers. Super great martial artist. He's getting a little up in the years. He's, like, 57 now, but, like, he was as recent as, like, Rogue One, which is 2016, you could see he's still kind of got it. I doubt they're going to have him be, like, some mega physical role. It'd probably be more similar to the Halle Berry thing and John Wick 3. But I'm excited for this. I like how they keep adding in people who know what they're doing and people who are trying hard. Like you saw the clips before John Wick 3 of Halle Berry doing like the shoot house courses like he did before, or like Keanu Reeves had been doing before John Wick. Like just people that really try and to sell these movies and make you believe the action that you're seeing are great. Like even in John Wick 3, beyond Halle Berry, they had like the two guys from the Raid franchise who were like great practitioners of martial arts in their own right. So super pumped for Donnie Yen. I think this is going to be a great crossover.
I like how they cast John Wick movies in general. You know, like, I mean, Halle Berry was good. I mean, I think the Lawrence Fishburne was good. Like, although like that, I mean, he was really good in that, but like that obviously I think was just like, that was kind of the marketing spectacle of getting the Matrix gang back together. But I like the Bowery King. So no slight there. And then the TikTok man, Jason Mantzoukas. So they like,
yeah,
they I think they bring people on that are fun, and they bring people on who like can contribute to the movie, but they don't like really overwhelm it with, no slight on like Donnie Yen or you know Halle Berry, but like they're not like, it's not like how I proposed before where I'm like bring Tom Cruise on to be the villain. Like they don't really overwhelm Keanu's turn as John Wick. Like the movie's all about John Wick still, but they're very solid additions to either John Wick's allies or John Wick's enemies. And I can't quite explain the formula, but it seems to work really well.
Remember when Boban Marjanovic got like his neck broken by a book in that movie? And I think it was John Wick 3. Like John Wick just takes like a 7'6" NBA player, breaks his neck. And like, that's only a 3-minute long sequence. Not that he's at the same star power level of like a Halle Berry or whatever, but like, I agree with what you're saying in that they never really seem to take away from his performance, like him being the main attraction essentially. Right.
Yeah. I mean, and like, you could argue, I mean, Halle Berry probably is a bigger star than Keanu Reeves, or like more accomplished, obviously, Academy Award winning Halle Berry. So I'm not talking like in terms of, like, I guess what I mean is like, they haven't really resorted to stunt casting outside of, wouldn't consider Lawrence Fishburne that, because he's very good in that role. That was like, it was nice to get them back together. That was kind of stunt from a nostalgia standpoint, but like, it does fit the movie pretty well. To the point where, like, obviously they keep bringing the character back, and like you kind of forget about it. I'm just talking like stunt casting is like hasn't gotten to a point where it's like, oh shit, like we need to bring a giant name into this. And so I think they add actors and actresses that like actually supplement it in a positive manner rather than just like hire names and then try to figure out what they do. I hate to talk about John Wick like it's a fucking masterpiece, but God damn it, it is a masterpiece to me.
That's one of those things. Like it's, I know it's just an action franchise, but like they technically and artistically wield that franchise very, very well. Like they know exactly what they're doing and it works out every time. Like there's not been a bad John Wick movie, and just statistically speaking, there should have been.
I mean, yeah, like, I mean, you could argue they've gotten less good. Maybe the argument,
but never is like bad, not, you know?
No,
there's no dud.
Well, they're still good is the thing. It's like, but you know, I think part of it is like recapturing the magic of the original John Wick. Part of that, like, was finding out about John Wick from your friends. Like, Keanu's in this new movie called John Wick, and like, you're the first thing is like the name of the movie is called John Wick, and they're like, yeah, like he takes revenge on like people killing his dog, and you're like, oh shit, that sounds cool, and then you watch it and realize it's like, it's really neat. It's a really neat movie. And so, I mean, I think like the experience does kind of like devolve into, you know, the thing with sequels, and that like, maybe you never really truly recapture the pure spectacle or the pure excitement of watching the original, but they are doing it like the sequels in a good way. And that, like, I think they're still delivering movies that are both good and true to the franchise and make sense from continuing the franchise standpoint. And that's why, like, I think they can keep on making Chapter 4 and then plan a fifth one that's still, you know, it's untitled currently, but I would be willing to bet it's called John Wick Chapter 5. If I had to put money down on it. Like, they might do the Parabellum thing where they put a little hyphen and do Parabellum, but I think John Wick Chapter 5 is a pretty safe bet.
And they're doing a Continental coming up soon, the series, which should be sick as well. Next thing up, Warner Brothers Discovery unveiled their new logo, and it looks like ass.
What is this? What is Discovery? Is this a streaming thing, or what is it? What's Discovery? Explain it to me. Like I'm an idiot.
Well, what, just the idea of Warner Brothers Discovery, or it's just,
yeah, what's Warner Brothers
be their
Discovery?
Okay, so like essentially,
is it like their Fox Searchlight Pictures thing?
Not really. It's like, so when they merged, Warner Brothers and Warner Bros. And Discovery, they had to like make this design for like the combination, like new thing, like essentially anything, any media that's going to come from them is going to have Warner Brothers Discovery on it. So this is going to be, I guess, their thing. Discovery said it's not their final product, but an initial word mark created to sit alongside the announcement of the company's name to employees. Since their merger is set to compete in 2022, they assume that there will be a new official iteration released by then. But just looking at it, it's just like, it's the old Warner Brothers, like gold plated thing, but like with the stuff that dreams are made of underneath it.
It's literally Discovery, like the Discovery Channel. I'm sorry. I'm like years behind in terms of news. And I do a podcast that talks about this stuff. I must have just forgot. Yeah, it does suck, dude. Like, and I guess part of it is like, you already got like a really good logo that you could take the WB out of and people still know what it is. Just go with that. Like, who are the people who are so egotistic that they are still needing the Discovery name attached to this?
It also doesn't look, and I don't know if I'm crazy on this, it doesn't look like the subtext that they have on it. Because it's, so for those of you listening and you haven't seen it before, it just says Warner Bros. Discovery in the big gold-plated Warner Brothers font, but then underneath it has a subtext where it says the stuff that dreams are made of, and it looks slightly misaligned to the left. Am I crazy if you're looking at Trill?
I don't really see the misalignment, but here, let me blow it up. Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're starting with the W and ending with the period. This almost looks like the title screen from like a 2001 like sex comedy.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, actually. It just looks bad. And again, like you were just saying before, it's not the final title, and like they're going to move on, I'm sure, do something different. But like, why even do that this in the first place? Why release this out into the world and let people make fun of it?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm a big fan. Like, here's my general take on like mergers. Like, if two companies merge, you go with the brand name that's more recognized. You go with the brand name, like just don't try to mesh the brand names together. Just go with the bigger brand name, because I feel like you're going to go down that path eventually. And the thing with Warner Brothers, again, I don't know too much about it because I'm just now realizing that this deal happened for some reason.
I was confused when you asked. I thought you meant like why would they need the, like, what would they need the logo for? I was like, what do you mean?
The reason I got confused is I was like, well, it couldn't be like Discovery Channel because Disney got them. But then it was National Geographic that's on Disney.
Yeah.
And see, I'm not a smart guy. This is like when you, if you've listened to 364 episodes, you come to realize this.
Dude, you put me in a fucking pretzel there for a minute. That was tough for me to get out of.
Imagine how I felt. And not only do I have to look at the shitty logo that looks like the fucking title screen for Boner Boys Road Trip 2, I have to find out about this huge media merger that I never have. And I'm getting caught up on all this now. Getting caught up on the media news.
We could go into an easier topic for you, I assume, and it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Seth Rogen announced that his Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film will release on August 11th, 2023. It's about a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, from what I'm reading, and it'll be CGI.
I love Seth Rogen. I completely trust the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and his very capable pottery-making hands. They need to do the puppet costumes.
You think that's what's going to bring them back?
I don't know. I feel like Seth Rogen could have a lot of fun with the puppet costumes. I just would like to see what the puppet costumes would be like in Seth Rogen's hands. CGI is probably a lot easier, a lot less work maybe for actors, not for the actual artists themselves. Is he directing this, or is it just like a production credit? Cause I feel like he produces my own home videos now.
So he's a producer on this. And so he's going to be producing it. Brendan O'Brien, he wrote the reboot. He had written the script for Neighbors and Neighbors 2, which Rogan obviously starred in and produced with Goldberg and Weaver. Jeff Rowe, which kind of sounds like if Scooby-Doo is trying to say Jeff's name, he co-directed and wrote the recent Netflix movie Mitchells vs. the Machines. And he's going to be directing it, which I think all of that is a positive sign. Especially having anyone from Mitchell's vs. the Machine on board with this is great. Obviously, I think anyone that Seth Rogen trusts is going to be a worthy person to have on board for this. I think you're obviously significantly more of a TMNT guy than I am. So I think that it really, like, you're the person they need to impress, because like that is the age group Seth Rogen is in, and that is the one he wants to impress for this as well as kids. I don't think he's trying to target people from my demo, you know?
You don't think this is a play to bring the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to a new generation? You think this is a pure nostalgia cash in?
No. What I'm saying is I think that he's targeting two groups, right? He's targeting the group of people that grew up with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and he's trying to target groups of like new wave, like kids and whatever else to try and get them into it. But I don't think the people between there is who he's trying to target with this, probably.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah, who knows, man? Like, I think just because of CG and because of the people who are attached, and it's also like Nickelodeon Animation Studios, if the target audience, I feel like, is going to be a tweener target audience. So I probably take the puppet costume thing back, because in my mind, like in my own headcanon, where like I'm the protagonist of reality and everything happens for me and my own pleasure, Seth Rogen would make like an R-rated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie with the puppet costumes and inject some, you know, some stoner humor into it. Like Michelangelo's ordering 40 pizzas. It's like, Michelangelo, why are you ordering all those 40 pizzas? And he's like, cause I got high, you know, just riffing off of that. Cowabunga, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they're a very easy thing for kids to love, though. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? Like, it's easy to get behind them. They're kids that just want to relax and have pizza and kick ass.
Well, I think there's something generally appealing about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for a variety of reasons. Is like, one is that like they are young, they are teenage, but they're not younger than the audience watching it. So they're aspirational figures of sorts. And then two, you know, they're like, I think they relate to kids who are, you know, kids are still trying to figure out the world. And these turtles have been cast into a underground lair, you know, a sewer in a world where they don't quite fit in. And so I think there's like some elements about like coming to age and also I know I'm overanalyzing it, but like, I think there is some like appeal to the Ninja Turtles for those reasons. And like why they grab, you know, when I was like five, why they grabbed the attention of like kids my age so much. And also kind of like why it's still an established franchise. Like they've had very successful TV shows. I mean, I haven't watched them, but mm-hmm. obviously it's still on the air through multiple iterations.
Yeah. No, agreed. I mean, it's a very popular franchise still to this. Like, I mean, obviously not now as much as it was then, but I do think that there's obviously something there to connect with, you know, parents with their kids or whatever you want to call that. Especially because I feel like people who were kids when TMNT were super popular, or maybe like people who were like preteens when TMNT was super popular, and now probably have preteens of their own. So there's like a good, nice little mix point there. Before we get into the next news item, I want to talk to you about Credit Karma. If dreams of vacations and enjoying the fun of life are turning back into reality for you, don't let your concerns over financial setbacks keep you from saying yes. Credit Karma helps you keep your financial goals in check so you won't have to hit pause on a good time ahead. Starting something new can be nerve-wracking. When you want to know beforehand if it's going to work or not, Credit Karma will give you the confidence to know before you make that decision. All right? Karma Credit. Credit Karma's game-changing technology shows you tailored offers for credit cards and personal loans, and you're more likely to be approved for it so you can apply with more confidence. They use your credit and other financial information to show you custom recommendations. Whether you want cash back, travel rewards, or to consolidate debt, Credit Karma can help you find the offers that are going to help you fit your goals. With a selection of options that are and approval odds, you have the power to make an informed decision. Credit Karma, apply with confidence. Go to creditkarma.com/podcast to learn more and find offers that are tailored just for you. That's creditkarma.com/podcast. And you can see your offers on the Credit Karma app. Apply with confidence today. Go to creditkarma.com/podcast or the Credit Karma app. Next item up, we have the first trailer for Reminiscence from Lisa Joy and the creators of Westworld. It's going to star Hugh Jackman, Rebecca Ferguson, Thandie Newton, releasing in theaters and on HBO Max August 20th. It's about a scientist who discovers a way to relive your past and uses technology to search for his long-lost love, while a private investigator uncovers a conspiracy while helping his client recover his lost memories. This trailer was weird. It almost seemed like a mixture of like Inception and like, trying to think of what else. There was something... What was the movie with Justin Timberlake and Olivia? Yeah, I was confused with About Time. It almost reminded me of like a blend of those two movies a little bit.
Wait, setting wise, anyway. Is it In Time or About Time?
About Time's the one with
Amanda Seyfried, Justin Timberlake's In Time.
Okay, so In Time is the one I was thinking of. Yeah,
and Olivia Wilde plays his mom in that movie.
Yeah, which was very confusing. Cillian Murphy in that as well, if I remember correctly, he was the bad guy.
Yeah, and Pete from Mad Men, Vincent.
That's right. Yeah.
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 I didn't really get the plot of this movie from the trailer, which might be a good thing. Like, you knew there was like some like going back in time sort of thing, and then I thought the funny line of dialogue was like, "Nothing's more addictive than the past."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, "Well, what about cigarettes? You sure cigarettes aren't more addictive? It's got nicotine in them," which that just seemed like
built.
I don't know. Did it have like a noir vibe to it? Like, was that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, so I guess that like sort of dialogue kind of fits in there. I mean, looking at it, it's got this like LA noir type of vibe. Even I'm looking at the poster right now.
It's sick, right? The poster's awesome. I got to give that to the movie for sure.
The poster's really cool. You know, it's got like some art deco signage on it saying hotel. So it's like, you know, it's throwing off that vibe. Like, I'm kind of excited about it. I liked the first season of Westworld, so it'll be fun. Like, you know, what's the downside to this? I'm going to see on HBO Max. I won't go into the theater for it, but I will see on HBO Max.
Yeah. I think it looks interesting, like the plot, like concept wise. Right. But at the same time, August, and that point in August is usually a dump date. Like, they don't usually put in a lot of like high profile blockbusters or anything like that. So that tells me that I don't think that Warner Bros. Thinks this is going to be good. But like you said, could just watch this on HBO Max. No love lost. And if it's great, awesome. If it's bad, I didn't lose much. So I don't know. I'm hoping it's good though. Again,
it's weird because it's shockingly high budget. It's $68 million.
Mm-hmm.
which I don't know. Is that high? I mean, it seems kind of high for this movie. Like, I guess the trailer.
I'd say that's mid budget. I'd say that's around mid budget.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
it's high for a movie that's being put on streaming. Yeah, I'll give you that much. But again, this movie looks like it relies on a decent amount of special effects and all that. But I hope it's cool, and hope it makes something. It's like anytime you dive into like memories of subconscious, now you're forever going to be like, I feel like noted as resembling Inception, which sucks that he's that market's very much cornered. I feel like now, I don't know. Again, I love Hugh Jackman. I love Rebecca Ferguson, Danny Newton as well. I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, speaking of Nolan, I watched Tenet again for the other night, or for the second time on the other night. Yeah, it was on HBO Max. Like it less. I liked it less. I found it kind of annoying this time. I found the dialogue kind of stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, maybe the first time I was just so like hungry for new movies, and it was just the overall spectacle of it was kind of cool. I know it's like one of those things. Like there are people that like Tenet, but there are people that really hate Tenet. I think I came around to understanding a little more how you could hate Tenet, even though I still kind of enjoyed it. It is kind of stupid, right? Like, Christopher Nolan, you want to think of him as like this high concept guy, but he really just is a dude who just fucking loves to think about time, right?
It's
like,
yeah.
What if time was like, we got into the turnstile and then just kind of like went backwards? Let's try to make that work.
It was, and I think I said this at the time, it was kind of like a heat check, right? He's like, how much can I fucking get away with before people start getting a little bit pissy? And I think it worked for a lot of people. It was in between for some like me, and for some people they just really didn't like it. But it definitely, the dialogue I think in that movie was maybe some of his clunkiest Nolan's anyway.
It just, like, there were times, like, I think it was like a lot of it was the conversation between the protagonist and the Priya character, where a lot of it's just kind of like trying to be like witty back and forth, like high stakes
espionage, whatever,
James espionage Bond-y dialogue, where it's like trying to be really slick and really cool, but then like it's also like playing, it's like nobody talks like this, it's not natural. Anyway, that's been our second review of Tenet. Check it out on HBO Max.
We can move on to the next topic. It's Taylor Swift got cast, and this is your girl. She got cast in the next David O. Russell movie. There's no title for it yet. There's no details for it yet. But the one thing that is known is that as a monster cast, including Robert De Niro, Margot Robbie, Christian Bale, Zoe Saldana, Timothy Olyphant, Chris Rock, Anya Taylor-Joy, Mike Myers, Rami Malek, Michael Shannon, John David Washington, and more. It's a monster cast. We don't really know. Again, there's like not really any details about it at all. So like it's tough to really make any like approximation of like I can't say, oh, this is awesome, she's a perfect fit, because I don't know what this is about. The cast is awesome, and that's always going to be a great sign. I'm a fan of David O. Russell. Three Kings, I mentioned all the time, I feel like, on this podcast. Silver Linings Playbook's great. The Fighter's one of my favorite movies. American Hustle, meh. But I mean, the dude knows what he's doing, and I think that this cast is huge and awesome.
He's remaking He's Just Not That Into You is what this is. It's going to be a big ensemble remake. Yeah. The Ben Affleck character is now going to be played by Robert De Niro. The Jennifer Aniston character is now going to be played by Margot Robbie. And then the, Robbie in that movie? The Justin Long character. The Justin Long character. That's Mike Myers now.
So just I thought I was going to make that Chris Rock.
You kind of wonder what kind of thing this is. David O. Russell, like, you know, folks, we love David O. Russell, don't we? I guess I'm okay with David O. Russell. I liked, Silver Lining Playbook obviously got a lot of love. I thought that was very good. And The Fighter, I liked The Fighter a lot. It probably was my favorite. When you say,
where do you rate Taylor Swift's filmography right now? Because you got The Lorax, The Giver, Cats, Miss Americana, if you can even count that.
She definitely needs to fight her way back at this point. I'm actually glad that she's getting another. I mean, not that she needs another chance, because she's fucking Taylor Swift. Like, she can do whatever she wants. But I'm glad that Cats didn't completely derail anything, like her willingness to be in movies. But I think part of it too is like David O. Russell seems probably like, I mean, when you agree to do a major motion picture adaptation of Cats, like you got to know you are taking on some risk there.
Yeah.
And so here, this seems like a lower risk proposal. Like I would feel more trust. And actually the funny thing is like for as shitty as that movie was, like it didn't seem to damage anyone's reputation.
Yeah.
Right. Like nobody thinks of like Idris Elba as like, oh, dude, using Cats, like kind of the same way you think like 20 years ago, that big of a stinker would have like been like, oh my God, what were they doing? Now it's just kind of like, eh, whatever. Like everybody involved with this has earned enough credit already to have us not write them off.
Yeah.
It was a movie.
I don't think anyone got completely derailed other than whoever. And it's too, like, I was almost going to say like the people who did the effects on it, but it wasn't even really their fault either. They were really just run by this like weird fucking, what was it? Tom Hooper, like, tyrannical state of producers and editors and whatever. So like, I don't know who to blame with that really, other than Tom Hooper probably.
And I think one of the reasons for it is everybody kind of knew what it was going into it, right?
Yeah.
And also like nobody really took it seriously either. So actually, like, for as much shit as we give it, like I do think Cats was a net positive for society because it gave us collectively all something to like dislike together, or at least ridicule together for a bit. And I think there's a value to that.
Agreed. Next news item up. Jonathan Majors is in discussions to star in Creed 3 as the next adversary. Why do I say advertiser? Because I'm thinking of Next Up, which is an ad. Michael Don B. Draper, Jordan is going to...
The ad man.
Listen, I think this is what we got to sell for this fight. The one person we want to fight Adonis Creed, gotta be Jonathan Majors. Why? Because he's a major attraction.
Creed, we have an idea for you, but Everlast wants you to change your name to Everlast. But it's already trademarked by the rapper Everlast. So you gotta fight Everlast.
Listen to me really closely on this. What if we had Adonis just blast cigs in the middle of his fight? Just take off your gloves, rip a cig between rounds. Just call me back about it. Would have been great. But yeah, Jonathan Majors, great actor. I feel like progressively throughout his career, we've seen him get more ripped. Like in Defy Bloods, he was massive. And, you know, I'm a very big fan of his. I think that he is going to be great if they cast him in this. It's going to be tough being a better villain than Victor Drago because he was just so like, he didn't have to say anything. He was just such like a scary, intimidating presence. And again, me and Jeff had watched the screening of it, and he was in the room wearing like a tracksuit. He looked like Nico from Grand Theft Auto, except he was just massively built with like a lady on each arm. He was scary as shit. And again, just very intimidating presence. So it's going to be tough to live up to, but excited. Maybe he'll end up being, what was Mr. T's character's name in Rocky 2 or Rocky 3? Rocky 3?
Yeah, you're talking to the guy who forgets everything.
Clubber Lang. Maybe it'll be Clubber Lang's kid. I don't know.
I think it would be nice if he was like a more cerebral villain, you know, like at least compared to
Mind Games? Drago.
Yeah, who's more into like the mind games off of the actual boxing match.
Yeah.
I don't know like how that necessarily works out, but like at least that adds like, I mean, Victor Drago is cool, but like you're saying, like a lot of the character was just in his like physical presence. And I think you get that with Creed 3 probably as well, but it would be cool if there was like a little more, you know, like mental mind games. Let's go back to mind games, like a psychological bent to his battle with this character.
Yeah, I could see that. He'd see, like, send someone harass Tessa Thompson or something like that. Or they'll have a kid at this point because they already had one late in the last movie. Something like that. I don't know.
Maybe not that evil. Maybe less, but more like, you know, you play into just like, I don't know. That's why I don't write movies. But I do think it would be cool because, like, you know, like, obviously you're getting a great actor with it. Like, you know, put the actor's skills to the test. Let's get some good villain hero dialogue going.
I was thinking stuff like Blitz the League, but I see where you're going with it too. But yeah, Jonathan Majors is going to have a very major next few years. He's already got Ant-Man, the Wasp, Quantumania coming up. He's playing King the Conqueror. He has the all black Western movie coming up, where it's going to be him, Idris Elba, as he beats Keith Stanfield, Orlando, Regina King, playing Nat Love in that. And he has Devotion. He has a whole bunch of stuff coming up. Super excited for him. And Michael B. Jordan obviously has a bunch of stuff happening as well. Before we get into our review of A Quiet Place Part One Two.
Speaking of ripped, did you see the picture of Hemsworth?
I think that was prosthetics, man. I don't think that was his actual arms. That wasn't ripped, by the way. That was bulked. That was not ripped.
I hope it was prosthetics, man. I hate what they're doing. What's happening to my boy Kumail is, I don't like to
his
see
head. It. His head shape has been changed completely.
I don't know. I hate like commenting on it, but it's more from a place where it's like, it's just shitty, like expectations, like, and that's for everybody in Hollywood. Obviously it's not like, it's not the nicest industry, right? It's not, it's not the one that's most accepting.
Unforgiving.
Yeah. Or it's just the one that like, he wants to pit it one, you know, you got to look a certain way to get into roles and, for a lot of the superhero movies, I mean, obviously being in good shape is nothing new and people doing stuff to their bodies is nothing new, but I think it's the sheer size of the Marvel movies that kind of thrust it more to the forefront. And like, at first it was like kind of being presented in a way that's like, you know, look at Kumail's transformation. It was like really cool. And then you get to a point where you're just like, I don't want to speak too much about how they look, but I just like, I hope like mentally, like it's that industry's not doing something to them where they feel like they need to, you know, just hurt themselves long-term in order to like get what they need to advance their career, I guess. I'm trying to put it delicately, but it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, like I'm with that. Like I look at a picture, I'll be like, wow, that's crazy. Like, you know, what's happening there. But at the same time, you know, there's also like, there's a lot of shit going on in the background. So like, I try my best not to like be too, I try to avoid the ridicule, I guess.
Yeah, I understand. At the same time, it is weird to look at. And those arms that were on Chris Hemsworth in that picture from Thor 4, Love and Thunder, definitely not real arms. Just, I'm letting you know now, they were not real arms.
I thought they were real arms.
I remember when they did... They would digitally make Hemsworth's arms bigger in Ragnarok. I remember I watched the whole behind the scenes thing in the elevator scene when like they're going up and having the back and forth, him and Loki, like they digitally beef up his arms so that whole presence is maintained.
I think they should just wear the prosthetics from the Ludacris video.
Yeah. That's exactly what was running through my mind. The Get Back video.
Yeah. The giant hands. So just the way all Marvel movies are filmed now, it's every character has giant hand prosthetics from the Ludacris music video.
Massive prosthetics. Before we get into the review again of Quiet Place Part Two, let's talk really quick about Bright Cellars. Bright Cellars, we talk about them all the time. Bright Cellars are wine servers that help you find wines that you love while making wine more accessible for everyone. Whether you're new to the wine world or you've been drinking wine for years, Bright Cellars pairs you with unique wines using their crazy accurate algorithm. Just take the 30-second quiz and let the wine magic happen. They'll pair you with six wines that fit your taste profile. We've done them before. They sent me a big pack of wines. They like asked me like what type of like wines did you like. Personally, I'm a white wine guy. I like a good Pinot, good Sauvignon Blanc. But I don't know shit about wines. So they kind of helped me walk through the process of what my wine palate would be like. And they sent me the package of all the wines. And in the wines, they each have like this card that like, and I've talked about this before in other ads we've done with them, but they give you a card that tells you like, hey, this is what it is. This is where it's from. This is what it's, how it's made. And also like, this is what you should pair it with. And this is how you should drink it. Like, so like, and this is how you should store it. Like they tell you what to do because they realize, like, I think a lot of people, whether you're like anyone who's not like a connoisseur or what's the word? We were just talking about this before, the wine guy, what's their title? Their official title?
Sommelier,
Sommelier.
Sommelier. I still can't say
sommelier. Sommelier. Unless you're that, then like it's hard to know a lot of things about wine. So they kind of help you along in that process. I love the wines they had sent me. I've just finished the last bottle of white from my last package. Going to get a new one soon. They source their wines from all over the world: France, Portugal, Australia, South Africa, California, and many more. I think my favorite was actually a Pinot from Australia, which is very, very good. For podcast listeners, we are giving you 50% off your first 6 bottles from Bright Cellars. 50% off. Go to brightcellars.com/LCB. That's Bright, C-E-L-L-A-R-S, brightcellars.com/LCB to receive 50% off your first 6 bottle order. Grab your passport, a wine glass, and come explore the world of wine with Bright Cellars. Now, Quiet Place Part 2. Let's talk about A Quiet Place Part 2. Obviously, a very, I think, storied movie for this podcast, in that it was the last movie I'd gone to a screening for ahead of COVID D-Day, which I guess you call March 15th. I think I saw it March 3rd of 2020. Big pack theater. Saw it. I think I reported to you guys. I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. And then everything in the entire world shut down. And then it got delayed from, I want to say, and I'm going to double check here, so make sure I get it right. It was delayed. It was supposed to release on March. It was supposed to release on April 23rd. Got delayed to September 2017. Got delayed to later on this year. Then got bumped forward to May 28th because they're good people over there, I guess. And they decided, you know, we deserve an actually good new movie. It's been the movie that they've been saying is just like reviving the box office. It's been getting some great... great box office numbers. And it's been, I think, just kind of a revelation. We haven't seen a movie get numbers like this since COVID had started. So it's cool to see. Directed by John Krasinski, produced by Michael Bay. Stars Emily Blunt. Krasinski has in flashback scenes. As anyone who's seen the first movie, you know he dies. Cillian Murphy, Millicent Simmons. Noah Jupe, who you might recognize from, I want to say he was in something recently that we watched where he was more of a teenager. What am I thinking of? He was in Ford vs. Ferrari, Honey Boy, and he was in something else. He was definitely in something else recently that we watched. The Undoing. He was the teen in The Undoing, Hugh Grant's son.
Wait, what was The Undoing?
The HBO show? Yeah.
Forgot about The Undoing.
Yeah, it was really bad. It was for the best. And Jaimin Hansu in this as well. It was a very interesting movie. And if you don't know the plot, following the deadly events at home, the Abbott family must now face terrors from the outside world as they continue their fight for survival and silence, forced to venture into the unknown. They quickly realize that the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats that lurk beyond the sand path. So with The Quiet Place Part 2, I think it's easiest to kind of break it down into pros and cons, at least for me. I think on the pros list, I love the quick runtime. It's only like 90 something minutes. I thought the acting across the board is really great. Millicent Simmons again, just like in the first movie, I think brings a great perspective to it, and just a really great performance. I think the suspense is definitely there. That definitely followed up from the first movie. I think those moments where you're trying to do nothing else but not make a sound are great. And that's why I think that this movie, more than almost any of the other ones that have come out over the last few months that like theaters have become more approachable, this is definitely one that deserves to be seen in theaters, because that theater experience of silence and noise is obviously so much more amplified there versus at home. So if you're waiting for it to come out on streaming or you're pre-ordering or whatever, just go watch it in the theater if you feel comfortable with it again. But go watch it in a theater, because that experience is so great. And I think they also appropriately scaled up a lot of the action from the first one, because the first one is obviously very intimate and small scale. They move into a bigger area in this movie. And I think they did that well. And lastly, on pros, I think that the opening sequence was just, it was fantastic origin building without going overboard. I really thought that whole part of like the catastrophe starting and everything going to shit was very well put together. I think the car shot where like they're trying to escape was amazing. But then there's some cons, and I think this is the best place to give a score, right? So I gave it an 81. What'd you give it, Tro?
I give it a 70.
And you want to talk about what, your... what, what you Let's do, instead of cons, actually, you, what did you like about the movie?
So I did like, and this is kind of where, I mean, we go back to our conversation, like the last movie we talked about, where you kind of like, we talked about like, what's the point of this movie? And this is for me, like a big, what's the point of this movie, where I kind of felt like Quiet Place 2 was, or Quiet Place 1 was a very good self-contained story. And then this one, I will tell you my big con is I don't think this really moved the ball. I don't think the story started. I don't think the movie ended with the characters in like much of a different place. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It just, they're just kind of, you know, like stuff had happened to them, but they're still like,
you know, still have the same situation except on an island. And now with, I guess, a bigger weapon to fight the sound monsters.
Yeah, which is like kind of the same way the first movie ended, where you like come to the realization that the monsters like have a weakness. And then now it's just kind of like you're, I mean, I guess in like true sequel tradition, you're upping the stakes. I guess the con there, like my overall con is that like it just obviously it just felt like it didn't really add much other than the fact that it was an enjoyable movie, which is fine. And what I mean by that is like, I think the pros is like, I like Cillian Murphy and I like Jaimin Hansu and I like the additions they put in this movie. Like I thought they were fine. Like I thought it was interesting. If you were to make a sequel to this, I thought them like going on and going to the island and, you know, like all that whole thing was a lot more interesting than them just like staying in place. But I mean, ultimately, like, I know you said you liked the opening. I guess you have pretty much have to get the exposition for like the creatures and like maybe how they got there. But I do think it's one of those things where like, the mystery of the creatures is more, I don't, that's more terrifying to me when you don't like, when you know mm-hmm. like less about Agreed. Them. But at the same time, this is the same franchise that puts stuff on a whiteboard. So
and they use the whiteboard again. They use the whiteboard again in this movie, which is incredible. In the opening like minute.
I mean, that's what I kind of go back with is like, I struggle with my thoughts between this as a franchise and this as a standalone movie, because I think it's very fine as a standalone movie. It's not as good as the first one. And I think just by virtue of the first one, at least like it had the hook, you know, with the start of the movie and the way they use silence and all that stuff. And it wasn't a perfect movie, but it certainly was a surprising movie because I didn't expect it to enjoy it as much as I did. And with this one, like obviously, like, you know, having Emily Blunt be the breakaway like MVP of the first movie, just in terms of her performance, like I think the gang's all there, like the right people are in place. So you get a really good, like self-contained story that at least has some interesting stuff going on. But I just wrestle with the fact that like, I don't know if these aliens in this world is interesting enough. Like, and I don't even know if this family is interesting enough to keep carrying this particular story. Like, I'm like kind of waning in my like concern for them. Like, I don't really like give a shit if they go on to kill all the aliens. I feel like I'm fine with knowing enough about them already.
Yeah, no, I agree with a lot of what you said. And I think especially just the fact that like, there isn't, I feel like, a ton of room for them to expand upon, but the movie did feel very similar in sort of setup to the first, as far as like how everything was paced along and like the major, I guess, kind of plot structure points. And one thing that was kind of disappointing, and this is where I think I took off the most points for this movie, was that like they teased in the trailers in like art and everything else for this movie, like, look, like the people, they're going to make this movie. Like, this is obviously the first movie is all about family. This is going to be about them going out into the world and how the people that survived, they weren't worth saving, right? Like, they're all terrible, mean people. And like, we didn't get enough of that. We got like really, I feel like, one taste of that. And that really wasn't it. I don't think we got what was advertised in that sense. And I really would have loved more of that, because I think one thing that people love more than almost anything else, and you're talking two huge Last of Us fans, is this like the breakdown of society and like how that affects people and how they like, you know, become feral like that quickly overnight almost. And I think that would have been an awesome sort of area to explore. We didn't get that. We got them essentially going to like a utopian society and like that, and like and I think that them just having the fight with the guys in the dock or whatever, like that wasn't enough. I think we should have had so much more of the human element than we got. And I think the monsters were scary. It was very entertaining. Again, the suspense behind it was great. The use of sound and no sound, always fantastic, as it was in the first movie. But they just, there was something missing from this to make it something great, or not something great even, but something that like was on even close to the level of like the first one was, as far as ingenuity and all that. It just felt like a little bit of a rerun. You know what I mean? And like, we needed something very new, not just here's a couple new characters. We need something really new. And I also just felt bad for Jaimin Hansu, because like, before we interviewed him, I watched the movie and I was like, damn, he's really in this movie for like 5 minutes. He deserved more screen time.
We're on the same wavelength on this. Like, I think that's a good, really good way to distill it in terms of just, and this may be what I was thinking, where it's kind of like, you know, why did this get made? And you can ask that of all movies and all sequels and all franchises and all reboots and all everything like there. And I think the challenge with this particular genre is, you know, when you have something start off as small as you did in The Quiet Place, like the only really thing you can do is open the world up. And then the problem with opening the world up is like, the whole thing is, like you're saying, just in The Last of Us, is like you're really living in a world that's not worth living in, except for those you make connections with. And in Last of Us, it was, you know, Joel and Ellie. And in this one, it's Evelyn and Emmett and Reagan and her family and the little baby. What's the little baby? What's his name again?
I don't remember.
Emmett. I'm sorry. It was Marcus. And then the baby. I'm just use the actors' names instead. That's why I can never remember them. And so, like, you know, the big point of this is, like, obviously, like, you know, you persevere because you love those around you, and you always get this, like, and that's why, like, opening the world up kind of, like, I don't know. I don't think it's always the best thing, because, like, almost like the sense of scale and the small sense of scale in the first one, it adds to that feeling of helplessness. But it also adds to that feeling of like, well, you know, I have those who are most important to me right here. And like, I guess you kind of get this in this one, because they stay together and they persevere as a family in that. But I feel by opening up the world, you kind of just, I mean, I guess you are adding hope and kind of how that ends with the radio station and whatever. But it just is like, the question is like, what are you going to do a third one to actually show them blowing the brains out of the creatures with the signals and whatnot? Like, do you do a third one, or is that the, just the implied ending of the franchise? And then for me, it like begs the question of like, well, okay, like, are there more of these aliens on a spaceship or whatever came crashing down to Earth? I want to know, but also I don't, because I don't really need a Quiet Place 3.
Yeah, so, it'll be them having to go kill like the queen alien thing, more or less.
Yeah, it becomes a non-political Starship Troopers.
Yeah, basically. But again, I do think that the one thing it really needed more was that human element, like you were talking about too. Just show that real breakdown of society, show cannibal groups or whatever, show like, make it scarier from that side, because we already know the monsters are really scary, and they also like not nerfed the monsters, but like when the entire like climax of them, and this happens with almost every monster movie, but when the entire like point of the runtime of the whole first movie is to kill one monster and then you're mowing them down in the second, like I want it to still be very hard. And that was again part of that intimate scale of the first movie, in like that just such an overwhelming like adversary, like that is what made that so scary. And I don't want that effect to be lessened over time. And I know like the sound weapon is supposed to be the thing that helps them or kind of gives them hope and all that. But like, I don't want the effect of fear for those monsters to be lessened. And it does get lessened when they're easier to kill, obviously. And also gets lessened when the more they're explained. Because like you were saying before, like the what's scarier than the unknown, right? Like just this random thing here that all it wants to do is fucking murder the crap out of you. And like, that's it. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can't explain it. Can't find it. Can't do anything. Like, there's nothing scarier than that, really.
Yeah. But, you know, for like all I'm talking about, like what I wanted of this movie, like the movie somehow, even though they went out into the world, it retained the same vibe as the original Quiet Place. And a lot of that, I think, was just due to Emily Blunt and her consistency and performances I mean, like I said, like MVP of the first movie, MVP of this movie, like what else is there to say about Emily Blunt? Like I do admire the consistency between the two movies in some sense, even though I'm not exactly like completely thrilled with it. I gave it a 70, obviously, because I think there's a lot here. Like you have the same beats as the first one, and it is very entertaining. And I do like the meeting new people in an apocalyptic world. And I like Cillian Murphy's character a lot. Like there are a lot of positives in this for me, but at the end of the day, like you kind of get to the end of it. You're just kind of like, okay, like, are we done? Or is this the it feels resolved, but it doesn't. And then it also doesn't feel like we actually like really went anywhere. Mm-hmm. It just feels like the same ending as the first on a bigger scale.
Yeah, no, I agree. Again, I gave it an 83. You gave it a, what would you give it?
70.
70. You just said that. Sorry. And I gave it an 81. I just blanked out there for a second. Audience, I would guess they probably gave it like an 86, 87. That would be my guess, is that the audience really liked this. Let's move on into our draft. Our draft is going to be of airport and airplane things. I have Jeff's list here, so we'll be drafting him in an absentina, and he has a pretty good list here too. But we're going to do our draft order here today. It's going to be you, then me, then Jeff. So, Tro, you have first pick. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Travel theme. Jeff's traveling. My first pick, it's a clean bathroom stall in the morning to poop in.
Morning in an airport.
Maybe nobody else has used it that morning because it's so early, but like you have to poop at the airport, and the way people treat the toilets at the airport is maybe the most disrespected toilets in the world. Airport toilets, I think.
Like, okay. Let me counterpoint with stadium toilets.
The airport toilets are the second most disrespected toilets in the world. But the thing, at least stadium toilets at least have an excuse that like people are getting sloppy at a stadium. There's some drunkenness going on at a stadium. Like I know like people have drinks at an airport, but it's not the same. I just, the way people are able to miss the airplane toilet or the way they're able to just leave toilet paper in there. I like to avoid that if I can. And then just being able to find that one stall that's pristine with nothing in the actual toilet, looks like it hasn't been used that day, that gets your travel day off to a good start. And that's why that's my number one pick.
I agree. Nothing worse than walking in the stall and like, you just know it's been recently pooped in. Not even your actual stall, but one very close on either side has definitely been shit in, because you can still feel the heat and the radiation and fumes coming from like that area.
Yeah, and then also the thing is, you have a carry-on and you're by yourself. Like, you have to put the carry-on in there to poop with you. Like, and ideally, like, the stall would be big enough, but a lot of those airports, and I don't want to take accessibility stall. Like, I somebody may need that. Yeah. Like, I'm just not that guy. A lot of them, you get in and your suitcase is touching your knees and you're just trying to blow it up in there. It's not great. So when you have a positive experience, you got to take that as a W.
Yeah, agreed. I remember once, and cause this is because I'm an anti rolly backpack or rolly suitcase guy. I almost always exclusively use I have a very large duffel bag that I use for travel, and I had to take pinch a huge loaf in the airport, basically. And I had to bring in my massive duffel bag, and there's nowhere to put it really, right? Like, you can't put it on the ground there because it's disgusting. So I tried to hang it on the back of the bathroom door on the hanger, and it tore the hanger off. So there was this massive commotion where it essentially flung the hanger into the tile behind me, and my thing dropped on the ground right into like what I'm sure was a giant puddle of piss.
There's never been a better time to get into rolling suitcases, my friend. Like
I just never liked them because I hate having to walk behind rolly backpack people in the city. They're the worst. They take up the entire, like they take up like a legitimate, like 5x10 area somehow. And I've always on principle never gotten one because of that.
But the airport is a safe haven for rolling baggage. That is a place you should look. Don't be a duffel bag guy. What are you, 26 now?
28.
Oh, you're 28. You're just like, you're perpetually 26 to me, just in the same way I'm perpetually 34. Look, dude, get yourself a rolling suitcase. Don't be carrying around that yellow Adidas duffel bag that I know you got. It has your underwear shoved in the side pocket there.
That's right. You got that part 100% correct. Underwear is on the side, toiletries in the front bag, and then shoes are lightly stuffed into the other side bag.
What percentage of guys traveling with duffel bags do you think are keeping that travel size head and shoulders on lock in there? It's got to be 80%.
Minimum. I still like almost get embarrassed when I think about the amount of noise that made, because someone in the stall, like two stalls over from me, like, hey, you were right. Like, just don't talk to me. Like, any, you could hear a gunshot from this stall. I don't want you to speak to me from the other stall.
It's like, if I'm not all right, I will make sounds indicating I'm not all right. But I mean, and like, how do you explain that to somebody? Like, you got to use multiple sentences. You got to be like, I carry a duffel bag when I travel. And I hung the duffel bag up on the coat hanger, and the coat hanger fell off, and the duffel bag fell, and I'm still pooping.
Yep, I'm still shitting right out of my ass. I'm up, and my pick, I feel like this is an easy number two for me, TSA pre-check. I have to pick it. It's going to be off the board soon if I don't, so I absolutely have to pick TSA pre-check. Absolutely changed my life. Needs to go off the board almost immediately. So I think that's a pretty good pick, no?
I don't have TSA pre-check.
It'll change your life.
I know. I need to get
around. Actually, maybe not anymore. I don't know. Airports aren't as crowded.
Well, my wife just gets so mad at me because she has TSA pre-check, and I've never prioritized it. I don't travel that much, but I do travel like multiple times per year. And my rationale was always like, well, you know, if I was traveling every week, I would prioritize TSA pre-check, but I travel so infrequently and I just never get around to it. So she always goes ahead of me. If she has a kid, she goes ahead of me, and then she's just chilling in the airport lounge or whatever by the time I get through.
Yep.
They got the clear thing now too, where they scan your eyeball.
And I love personally,
hello, Mr. Ballins. Welcome to the airport.
I love the big air scanner thing where they can see your dick and balls. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I always got to wear my prosthetic dick whenever I go to the airport because I don't want them to know.
Sir, what's this large mass of silicone coming out of your leg?
I want them to be like, hey, this guy's got a hammer.
You just hear one of them go, oh,
oh,
yeah,
wow.
That's right.
Ooh. Sir, we can clearly see that that's a prosthetic dick. you have to go back and check your dick.
Either that's a prosthetic dick or you're very hard right now in the TSA line, which is equally impossible.
I can't check it. It's a prop from Boogie Nights. It's invaluable.
Jeff's pick, he picked the exit row with his first pick. That's a great pick, obviously. Exit row, always great if you can get it.
Have you ever had it where someone else books your travel arrangements either via work or, you know, a family member or whatever, and you just happen to be in an exit row and you didn't know you're in an exit row?
No.
I've had that before where I just had like tickets that, you know, were scheduled for me, and I get there and it's an exit row, and it's nice feeling. It's like waking up on a Saturday and thinking it's Friday for a minute and then realizing it's Saturday, except it's an exit row. And it's actually nothing like the analogy.
No, I agree with you. It's a nice bonus, especially because you would even think that the person must like you if they gave you, of all people, the honors of the exit row, because they know everyone's coveted.
Mm-hmm.
People want the exit row.
Well, they trust me is the thing, is they look at me and they're like, that guy's going to come through for us if it has to come down to it. If Sully has to put this bitch in the Hudson, then that guy's going to be popping that door open.
This guy's he knows how to inflate certain inflatable objects. I can just tell in his eyes he's done this thing before, that he's inflated a near larger than life size inflatable object before.
I've flown hundreds of times, and if you gave me one of the inflatable vests, I could not tell you how to inflate it.
Nope. I've never listened to the thing. I'm like, if this plane goes down, there's like a 1% chance I'm not dead. So like, why am I even going to bother?
The second you get on, they start doing it. You're like, it's Candy Crush time, baby.
Yep, exactly. Jeff's next pick, Airport Chili's. So I've eaten a lot at airports. I don't think I've ever eaten at an airport Chili's, so I can't attest to it. But you, I think, have.
I love Chili's outside of airports. I will go to great lengths to defend Chili's, but airport Chili's is, it's a treat. There's no other way to describe it. And it's also some of the worst food for like maybe eating before you go fly. Like I'm going to get some chips and salsa and some queso and a margarita and some spicy boneless chicken wings and then get on a 4-hour flight. But it, you know, it seems to work out. If it didn't work out, there wouldn't be any airport Chili's.
You know what I've been doing, and this is going to be, this is actually a good segue to talk just about airplanes in general. We were thinking about booking a flight to Singapore to see some of my girlfriend's family, and I just don't even know how to contemplate the amount of flight time involved with that. It's like a 28-hour flight.
I think from New York to Singapore, maybe from LA to Singapore. I don't know.
It's like 16 hours from LAX alone. So it's like you have to do flight from here to LAX, and then from LAX you can do direct, which is expensive as shit, or you can do like layovers in like Japan or whatever else, and then go there.
Yeah. Well, so the longest nonstop flight in the world is between Singapore and JFK, 18-hour flight nonstop.
Great. Dude, yeah. But again, that's the nonstop, which is going to be, would be nearly impossible to get without destroying my bank account, whatever's left of it.
I couldn't even imagine like just boarding a flight and being like, I'm going to be on here for 18 hours.
See, that's what I'm saying. I can't even, especially because I hate flying. So like the idea of being in the plane that long, I think the longest flight I did was to like Greece. And that was still like, I think 8 hours. Like it's only 8 hours. This is basically three times that. Because it's realistically with layovers, it's going to take me at least 24 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an investment of time. I just like whenever I get like a 3-hour flight, I'm like, oh, the flight's going to be 3 hours. And then like 20 minutes in, you're like, well, it must have been at least an hour and a half.
Yeah, exactly. See, that's what we're talking about, the flight tracker. Every time with the flight tracker, you just sit there and you look at it, and it's like watching like your numbers of calories burned slightly go up on the elliptical or whatever, like one every minute. And it's so deflating. And this one, I think the way we'd have to end up doing it is here to LAX to Tokyo to Singapore. And just what's even worse than that is like, it would be great for the first day we landed. For the whole like 3 days leading up to the flight back, I would be thinking of nothing but the flight back. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Like that would probably disrupt my life for at least 2 years. I think it would take me 2 years to adjust from having taken that flight.
I can't even, again, like conceptualize it. I almost just, can we just take a boat? Yeah, can we just like stow away in a container ship?
Take like 3 weeks too.
To get there. Yeah, exactly.
But Singapore would be great though. I think Singapore would be, they got that that airport in Singapore, you know, that has,
it's amazing. Apparently it has the best that
atrium
the
with the waterfall in it.
Yeah,
that'd be worth it. Take the 18-hour flight, stop in the airport for 4 hours, eat in the airport Chili's in Singapore, and then turn around.
They apparently Tokyo has an amazing airport too.
Narita.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about that airport as well. Which reminds me, or gets to my segues to my pick. My pick for my second overall pick is Termes. Shout out to the Wonton Don. You take a terminal beer is great. I think especially when I was like taking my first flights like out of college and like doing like trips with friends or whatever else, when you all just sit around and have a termy nice little terminal beer, just like there's a good feeling of adventure to that. It feels like you're like Indiana Jones or something, like about to go off do something crazy when you're really just about to go like drink an overpriced margarita at Senior Frogs.
The one beer before a flight, I mean two beers is the ideal. That's the platonic ideal of a good buzz for me. But I feel like two beers is too buzzed to fly on an airplane, because I feel like that puts me in a headspace where maybe I won't want to keep drinking. The one beer is the perfect airplane beer amount.
Yeah, agreed. I think I would do maybe even four so I could knock myself out, because I literally cannot force myself to go to sleep on planes at all.
You could just get drunk before you go to Singapore, and then you're like passed out for like 8 hours of the flight, and then you're hungover for the other 10.
Oh, don't even say that. Oh, it's like just miserable to think about. It's pissing me off, and it's not even like a thing yet. You know what I mean? Fuck.
No.
Okay. You're up, by the way.
All right. Call me a simple man, but nothing's as satisfying. Nothing makes that baby brain of yours clap. Just like seeing your little bag come out of the carousel, just seeing your little waist suitcase just pop out of that carousel and get on the belt. And you just like a child, you just almost want to point at it, be like, mine. And you just, that's mine. Hey, everybody, that's my bag. It just came out. And you just move ahead of the line and grab it. You feel so triumphant. You're like, oh, I have reached my destination. I'm ready to go get my $230 Toyota RAV4 rental.
No, you're absolutely correct. Every time I see it. And I remember once someone had a duffel bag too similar to mine, and I grabbed it, and he's like, whoa. He gave me like the hands-off chief motion. I was like, oh, sorry, yours doesn't say Adidas and it isn't yellow. That's my bad. And so I had to wait until mine came around in the second grow round.
One time somebody took my bag accidentally because they had the same bag, which I'm sure is very common. Yeah, they've left the airport, but he realized. So it was a Tumi, you know, and Tumi bags all look the same, except for you're supposed to get yours monogrammed. And we both had red monograms with our initials, even though his initials were not my initials, and he just didn't bother to check it. And so he leaves the airport, and we both called the bag hop. Well, okay, I'm sorry. I'm there and my bag just isn't coming out. So I get involved with the bag hop or whatever. I don't know the name.
Title.
The,
yeah.
Yeah. But I'm like, my bag's not here. But then he calls them during that and says, I picked up the wrong bag. And so then I have to wait there another 45 minutes, and he comes back and switches the bags out. So it could have gone a lot worse. How did this
guy get 45 minutes away from you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he must have just, I don't know when he realized that it was not his bag, but it was not a 5 minute thing where he was back at the airport. Like, he had left the grounds of the airport.
Gotcha.
And then he had to repark it, rewalk, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was still there. I was doing the paperwork. I was like, lost bag form or whatever they have. Like, I forget, but it was a very sinking feeling in my stomach, because my work computer was in there, and I was still like, you know, I was like, oh, they're gonna fire me. Mm-hmm. I keep all my files on my desktop. I didn't back that out. I didn't back that off into the F drive. What the fuck are you talking about?
Absolutely not. You have back to backs, by the way. You're up again.
All right. My third pick is when you get on a flight, you just like 2 hours and 30 minutes is what you think it's going to be. And the pilot gets on, he's like, today's flight will be 2 hours. And when the flight is shorter than you originally thought it would be, either they're like, you know, they're using the wind like an Avatar.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
They're using the jet stream or whatever. There's nothing better than that. Like, I feel like that's them giving time back to me. Like, thank you. I love that.
Yeah, when they say something like, clear airwaves today, good wind, no turbulence, so I should actually shave about 25 minutes off our time, or whatever, and you're like, holy fuck, how did you do that? Like, it's some sort of magic trick when it's just like the simplest thing. And it sounds like he's like gifting you an extra cherry on top of your meal.
Well, did I talk about my 13-minute flight on the podcast last episode?
No. Not that I remember.
So like when I went to Asheville a few weeks ago, I flew into Charlotte and then took an airplane to Greenville and then drove to Asheville. And I realized you could
Greenville just and drive. Asheville are like 5 minutes away, are they not?
They're 2 hours. Asheville is Greenville is like it's like an hour and a half. But the drive from Asheville to Charlotte's like 2 hours. I scheduled it in a way that it would take me to Greenville without realizing that. And we got up in the air or we're leaving, and then the flight from Charlotte to Greenville, it's like today's flight will be 13 minutes. And I was like, this must be what it feels like to be on the Concorde, honestly. Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned that one flight from Chicago for Celebration. They had to land us in Connecticut and then fly us to LaGuardia. And it was like 10-minute flight, same thing. And I was like, this is strange. Like, I can't even process how short this flight is. Like, they didn't even reach like cruising altitude or whatever.
Cause a plane has to use a lot of fuel just taking off, right? Like just the pure physics of getting that heavy thing off the ground before getting the benefit of like the aerodynamics. Again, not an engineer.
Yeah.
I'm just like, the economics of that, a 13-minute flight doesn't quite make sense, but apparently they do.
It all worked out. My pick, by the way, is going to be seats near a charger, and that counts for in the terminal and it counts for on the plane. So if you get a seat with a charger or one that has one adjacent, it's just a great feeling, because even though you don't need a full charge before you get on, or for whatever reason, you need to charge up. So you just sit there just suckling like a hungry kitten at its mother's teat, but except it's just you charging the crap out of your phone until it sits at 100% forever while you're playing Candy Crush.
There's nothing worse than starting your travel day with 31% battery. Like, by however reason you got to there, I don't know. Like, maybe you're out drinking and then you have to turn it around and go home. Or maybe your charger didn't work at night, or maybe you just forgot. But you're sitting there, it's 31%. You know you're going to have to ration that phone unless you find that charger. And when you do find the charger, feels like you struck gold.
Mm-hmm. Jeff's pick is Global Entry.
What does that mean?
It's like Trusted Traveler, I think. It's pre-proof clearance. So it's essentially, I believe, like kind of like TSA PreCheck, unless it's the same thing. Again, that's something I don't really know. I have TSA PreCheck, but like, I don't know terminology behind anything. It might even be the same thing. I really don't know. But it is expedited seating. You know what? Actually, he has better picks than that, so I'm just gonna take it right off the board, because it might even be TSA PreCheck. I'm gonna pick his next pick, and it's seat upgrades. Because seat upgrades is a great pick.
I don't think I've ever had my seat upgraded for me.
I've only had it done once when they fucked up my flight. I think United, and it was really cool. It was really, really cool.
I don't know. I think a lot of it is that I feel like just like where I am and where I fly to, like, I'm never really flying between like New York and Los Angeles. So like, I'm on planes where, while there is a first class, it's not like the same first class as maybe you get in a plane that's carrying people between New York and Los Angeles with like a lot of travelers. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm just like, I'm not taking flights that are at a higher probability of offering upgrades just because they're smaller. But I can, you know, like, I bet that would be, I mean, I've like had the offer. It's like, would you like to upgrade your flight today? And you check it out, and it's like $175. You're like, nah, I'm good. I've had that offer, but I've never got my seat upgraded for nothing.
I had it done once to first class, and it was incredible. Even if it was a very short flight. Next, he picks the Detroit Airport Tunnel. And I don't know this because I've never been in Detroit Airport, but I don't know if you can attest.
Detroit Airport Tunnel. Hold on.
You know what? I'm going to Google it too. Again, I think we had talked about this the last episode.
Because I can think of the O'Hare United Tunnel. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I know what he's talking about now.
I've never been in it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, the O'Hare has something similar, I think, with like, they have a United terminal, or at least had a United terminal that plays the doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot, which is a very famous song I probably should know. That is cool. That looks like you're walking into the warm embrace of death.
It looks like you're doing the Willy Wonka thing, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
the thing that they parodied in Ragnarok. Yeah, the boat scene. That's cool. I love that. Again, need to go to Detroit Airport. My pick, being on a flight with no kids and no babies either. No kids, no babies on board. No crying, no bitching or moaning from any kids. A nice flight with well-behaved adults. There's nothing like it, Tone.
You know, you might expect me to be like, well, you know, the parents can't help it because I have a kid. I agree with you. Like when I was your age, I felt the same way. One of the benefits of having a kid is you realize how immune to that you become. Like it is a superpower for like being a parent where like whenever a child cries now, unless it's my child, I can tune it out very easily. Like somebody else needs to fix that, but it's not bothering me. But I totally get that because it's already like, you know, for a lot of people, flying is kind of a nerve wracking experience. And for a lot of people, it's not just like the actual getting on the flight. It's the whole process of like going through TSA and waiting. It's anxiety inducing. And the last thing you want, sometimes you just want to get to the flight itself, which is probably the chillest part of the entire airport experience. And you got a kid behind you kicking your seat. I get it. I'm not going to hate on you for that one, man.
Yeah. And I'm stalwart with that pick. No one would convince me otherwise that that isn't a great pick. You're up now. You have back-to-backs rounding yourself okay. out.
All right. So I'm going to take the conspiracy theories around the Denver airport.
Yeah. The underground, right?
I get a lot of things. I mean, there's the horse monument and then there's murals on the wall. And then there's like, I think there people feel like they can hear chatter. Or there's radio codes that broadcast certain things. It's quite fascinating. I like the whole idea that the airport serves as a hub for some Illuminati conspiracy shit. It makes me feel like a secret agent whenever I fly into it. But I more so like the fact that secret Illuminati shit is taking place beneath an Annie Ann's possibly. Mm-hmm. Or Potbelly. Like there's a blood sacrifice happening right beneath a Potbelly.
Yeah. I mean, it again, naturally, that all makes sense. I would expect them to keep their headquarters in the Denver airport. What's your next pick?
My last pick is it's flying private. I've only done it once. I realize it's an incredibly privileged thing to say. I had the privilege to do it, lucked into it. It makes you realize how much of commercial air travel is absolute bullshit that you can just roll onto the private airstrip and essentially just walk onto the plane. Mm-hmm. And it's not even like, for me, it's not even a luxury experience. It's just like being able to get out of your car, walk into a place and then sit down onto an airplane and fly away. That amazes me. I don't give a shit about like, the luxury trappings of influencer air travel. That's not why I care. I'm just more concerned with the fastest way to get from point A to point B.
Well, was it scarier on the plane? Like, did turbulence hit you worse?
No, I mean, there was turbulence. It wasn't notably worse though. Okay. I mean, I don't know. Again, one time, so I don't have a big sample size. So it could have just been a nice day in the air.
The only time I've flown, it's semi-private. When I went to Costa Rica with NYCFC, they rented out an entire 747. And it was, a contracted jet. So it was a 747, but it was just the team. And it was just a couple of their staffs and then me and our cameraman, John. So it was like basically an empty plane because there was only like, I don't know how many people they sit seat in those 747s, like 300. And there's only maybe like 100 people max there. And like there's just so much space and so much room. And it was just an incredible experience because like the same thing, like they fly you right into the tarmac and you just walk off and you're out, you know, it was incredible.
There was when I was at the Atlanta airport one time, like the plane pulled in and there was like a Porsche Cayenne out in the tarmac. And so I was like talking to the flight attendant like throughout the flight. And I was like, hey, like, what's that Cayenne for? And she was like, well, like sometimes people, you know, come to connect to private flights here. So they take a commercial flight, then they got a private flight and that Cayenne picks them up straight from the commercial plane and takes them over. I forget if it was the inverse, cause maybe they had to go through security, but like it takes them from the plane over to the private facility and vice versa. And that blew my mind, that the fact that there were just like cars driving on the tarmac that did that.
Especially Porsche Cayenne. All right. My pick, I'm picking duty free. Just nothing like going it. Duty free is like, I'll go in every time and I'll be like, I'm going to buy a bunch of shit and pay no tax. And then I don't buy anything. I'm like, look how cheap this liquor is. I don't buy it. Look how cheap this XYZ is. I don't buy it. Like, it doesn't matter. I'll walk into the duty free almost every time and not buy anything.
Well, I mean, typically it's the most fun stuff to look at in the airport.
Yeah.
If you want to kill a few minutes, it's more entertaining to look at what, you know, bottles of alcohol that's like 1.5 times larger than normal bottle they offer, rather than like see,
yeah,
you know, another picture of The Rock on all the men's fitness magazines and the Hudson booksellers.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, that's Jeff's next pick. His last pick and the last pick of the draft, Hudson booksellers.
Yeah, I mean, look, what can you say? They've been there for us. I mean, you know, if you want to buy a $9 magazine, it's there. If you want to buy a $40 Benadryl and get the full hospital experience, you can get it at Hudson.
Mm-hmm. I had that on my list as well. I pass anytime I take the LIR or NJT, I pass that big ass Hudson booksellers in Penn Station. I'm just like, damn. Feels like a fancy ass motherfucker in an airport right now.
Yeah. You know, Hudson's there. Anytime you want to get a water bottle that you'll drink approximately one third of and then put it in your bag and then not drink it the rest of the trip. The Hudson's
let it get there so warm in your bag. And then you put it in like your checked luggage and take it out the day later and you're like, oh shit, I can't finish this.
It's like, yeah, I'll come back to that water bottle. And then on day five of your trip, when you're packing up, you have to throw it out because you can't take it back.
Exactly. Some picks off on the board. I think the biggest one I left was the in-flight B-tier movie, which I always love. I love a good B-tier movie. Jeff left the Denver Horse, which you had picked, the Orlando Monorail, and the, which I'm sure, have you taken that? I know you've been to Orlando before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that cool? What is it like?
This is a monorail.
No, okay. He picked that, and he picked Auntie Anne's Pretzels. Anything left off the board for you?
I probably would have taken the shape of the Kansas City airport because I like the way that one's shaped, even though it's not the best airport. I think it gets the job done. And then I would also say the Indianapolis airport is one of the best airports in the country. It's not the most impressive airports of the country, but it's the most efficient in my opinion. It's a great airport. And also, like, the thing I like is the Louisville, Kentucky airport, like, has this long people mover to connect you to the actual terminal with a bunch of like ads for Louisville on it. As you look to the side, mm-hmm. It's like Louisville. It's like, you don't have to advertise to me. I'm either leaving the city or I'm going to it. I've already been to it or I've already seen it. I don't need to see the ad for it here. And that is interesting. They do that. And then the rocking chairs at the Charlotte airport. Who could forget those?
Those are cool. Cool rocking chairs. You got clean bathroom stall in the morning airport, seeing your bag coming out of the carousel when your flight is shorter because of wind or whatever. You got the conspiracy theories behind Denver airport, and you got flying private. I got TSA pre-check, termies, seats near a charger, a flight with no kids or babies, and duty-free. Duty-free. Implying also without the kids as well. Jeff has the exit row, airport chilies, seat upgrades, Detroit airport tunnel, and Hudson booksellers. A good draft, I think. I think we all did pretty well.
Yeah. You know, I don't love going through TSA, as I'm sure nobody does, but I kind of like kicking around the terminal for like 90 minutes before boarding. Like, anything longer than 90 minutes, I don't really like. But if it's 90 minutes, I'm like, this is kind of fun.
I agree in a sense. But at the same time, I'd rather just be in. Because the second I'm in, all my anxiety gets, like, released a little bit. Until I pass through those gates, it's just I'm on high alert. You know what I mean?
For what? Are you just, like, are you nothing. Nervous at air?
Well, yeah, I'm a nervous flyer, but like I'm more nervous almost about missing the flight. So until I'm like at the actual gate, I'm like just on a 10. You know what I mean? Like, I just can't calm down.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's something specifically anxiety inducing about going through TSA for me. As I'm sure it's not unique to me, but it's like it was created to like mentally fuck with you. Where it's like, take off your fucking shoes.
You're like a sub, just getting demanded around.
Yeah, bitch. Hey, take off your shoes. Hey, take off your belt.
Take off that belt.
Put it in the gray Ben right there. All right.
Take the bell to the side.
You didn't do it right. You didn't do it right. You didn't do it right, bitch. All right. Walk through. No. Anything in
your
pocket?
Put a laptop in a separate box, you fuck. You got your phone in your pocket,
you little pig. You got your phone and you take your little phone out. Don't put in the big bin. Put it in the little circular bin.
Listen here, kid. That's where the phone goes. Take out your keys. Put them right in that tiny bin. And think about putting your laptop there.
And put your hands over your head. Don't come out yet. I know the scan's complete, but you can't come out yet. Okay, now you can come out. You're good.
Sir, you better step forward, kid, and get inside the machine, kid. All right. That's...
Like this bit's basically me doing like a stand-up routine from 2002.
You're doing the airport peanuts bit, except it's about TSA.
So what's the deal with the TSA? Dane Cook's first big break. Did you just fucking take my belt off? What am I going to do with the belt?
I'm gonna tighten up the pants on the pilot. What am I gonna do, folks?
You know what I call this?
The belt.
I don't call this a relationship. I call this a relationship.
That clip is so funny, dude. And that killed. That slayed. You know, yeah, people were going home so excited
because it was funny back then. I don't know how to explain it. It was the fluoride in the water. It was the it was the Flo Rida being played on the radio.
He delivered it so confidently because he knew that joke was going to kill. Like, he like looked down and up. He did like the look down. He's like, I don't call that a relationship. I call it a relationship. And like everyone just like, he looked the crowd up and down and they just erupted in laughter like the pigs they were. And I don't blame them. Like you're saying, it was just funny. It was funny. That was funny then.
He had a very funny delivery.
He did. He had a great delivery.
I hope Dane Cook's one of those things we come back around to in 10 years. And it was like kind of the same way like people were ripping on Guy Fieri 10 years ago. So a lot of people don't want to admit. A lot of people think Guy Fieri's cool now, including me. But like everybody was ripping on him 10 years ago. It's true, okay. I hope Dane Cook's the same way. I hope we're just like, yeah, you know what? Like, it was funny at the time. We can at least recognize that.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the episode in the books. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to be reviewing on Sunday. I'm sure put it in the Reddit and Twitter and whatever else. But until then, I'm Ken Jack. This is Trip Owens, and
have a good week at the box office, folks.